China is not so sold on our debt.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. It's the Morning Open. Hello, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Some European advice for Greece's debt problems and American credit card debt? Not so good either. First, let's ask, where's Wall Street? Numbers are up right now. The S&P up about 2/3%. The NASDAQ up about 0.25% right now. The Dow higher by 54 points at 10,153. European markets are higher right now, under 1%. And Asian stock markets closed slightly higher. The markets in Hong Kong, Shanghai, and Taiwan were closed for the Lunar New Year. Word today, foreign demand for U.S. Treasury securities fell in December by the biggest amount on record, $53 billion. China, the biggest culprit there. It reduced its holdings by most of that. Julie Neiman is analyst at Smith Moore & Company. She's with us live this morning from St. Louis. Good morning, Julie.
Morning, Steve.
So China lost its top spot in terms of foreign ownership of these treasuries. Now it's behind Japan. I mean, what message does that send?
Well, China is merely not buying. What we're concerned about is what happens if they turn around and sell. Then we've got a problem. Months ago, they started lecturing us about getting our fiscal house in order. Our deficit is about 10% of everything we produce right now. And China has already started hiking their own interest rates to cool inflation. So the biggest problem we're faced right now is they want us to start getting our fiscal house in order. They don't want to buy an asset that goes down in value.
And I guess the natural question is, what does it mean for us?
Well, the biggest thing is that we can't do it at this point in time. Small businesses aren't getting loans. Job growth is not, we're not expanding, not hiring. There's no demand. Yes, we do have way too much debt still in the system here. But if we start getting the fiscal house in order right now, we're likely to see the recovery go down the tubes again. So we're stuck between a rock and a hard place.
I mean, does this mean interest rates are going to rise?
Absolutely. There's nothing the Federal Reserve can do about long-term interest rates. That's what the market does. Bernanke has already said they're going to remove some of the stimulus on the short end and start taking short-term interest rates up. But China is going to be the driver on long-term interest rates, which means, of course, your charge cards are going up, your mortgages are going up.
We talked, Julie, about the nation's debt, and that's going to be the argument against the Obama administration. And you mentioned, you know, there's this sort of fine line that we've got to sort of stick to. And the administration's fanning out across the country touting its stimulus package. I mean, what do they do? How do they carry this message?
Well, at this point, we have to look at what's good for the goose is maybe not necessarily good for the gander. We have to look out for what keeps us out of recession. And yes, that is going to mean higher interest rates. It is going to mean bigger budget spending. But the economy itself is simply not able to sustain itself without that fiscal stimulus. So bottom line is, next to Europe, we're looking pretty good, not according to the BRIC countries. But what the formula that will keep us out of trouble, it's okay to fry Greece, not us.
Well, you mentioned Greece. All right, Julie Neiman, thank you so much.
You bet.
Speaking of Greece, that country is facing a chorus of criticism and advice on its financial troubles. Today, ministers from across the European Union urged Greece to make some big budget cuts. Now even the Russians are chiming in. Marketplace Europe correspondent Stephen Beard reports from London.
This morning, the Greeks got a word of financial advice from an unexpected quarter, the Russian President Dmitry Medvedev. He urged Greece to turn to the IMF for help in its time of trouble. The advice won't be welcome in Athens. The IMF has been notoriously tough on debtor nations. And the advice won't be well received in Brussels, Paris or Berlin either. Megan Green is with the Economist Intelligence Unit.
Symbolically, it would make a huge statement. You know, the fact that an EU member state is having to be bailed out by an outside party and that the EU couldn't even handle its own crisis in its own backyard.
The EU is stepping up the pressure on its troublesome member. Greece has been given a month to show it's serious about cutting its deficit or face the prospect of sanctions. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Tuesday, February 16th, 2010, at marketplace.org. President Obama gave the go-ahead for more than $8 billion worth of government loan guarantees for the construction of a couple of nuclear power plants in Georgia, the nation's first new reactors in decades. From Washington, Marketplace's John Dimsdale has more.
the government will guarantee the repayment of private bank loans to the Southern Company, which hopes to have licensing approval to start building two nuclear reactors in 2012. The industry hopes the government's seal of approval will jumpstart new construction around the country. Baltimore's Constellation Energy is awaiting its own government loan guarantee. Mike Wallace is Constellation's chief operating officer.
Getting a loan guarantee is absolutely critical to moving forward. Commercial banks simply will not lend the money when no nuclear plant's been built in this country in 30 years.
But nuclear power skeptics like Vermont Law School's Mark Cooper say if other investors won't guarantee the loans, why should taxpayers?
It's quite clear that the industry is unable to move forward in private markets, and the industry wants essentially a bailout, a commitment from taxpayers to guarantee very risky projects.
Congress has already approved $18 billion worth of loan guarantees for new nuclear plant construction. President Obama has asked for three times that amount in next year's budget. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
The Federal Communications Commission has given a boost to those who want to start a tribal radio station. It issued a rule that gives Native Americans preference over all other applicants. Critics say the rule is unfair. From Phoenix, Peter O'Dowd reports.
Of the more than 13,000 radio stations licensed in the U.S., a mere 41 belong to Native American communities. So for those who live on reservations, reliable information can be hard to come by. Just ask Gail Houses from the San Carlos Apache tribe in eastern Arizona.
They want language classes, they want the weather, the local news, they also want the national news.
Houses is opening the tribe's new FM station, KYAY, and more tribal stations are likely to pop up now that the FCC has essentially guaranteed radio licenses for Native American applicants. FCC Commissioner Michael Kopp says that will meet his agency's obligation to make radio accessible to everyone.
When it came to Indian country, we weren't doing that, so now we're going to give a priority.
Of course, there is opposition. Chris Imlay is a communications lawyer in Maryland.
They have to be careful about how they go about policies that prefer minority applicants over non-minority applicants.
Imlay says the court has overturned previous FCC attempts to give preference to minorities, but he says there's an even bigger issue. Rural stations are notoriously short on cash, and Imlay says the FCC ruling does nothing to support a tribal station's bottom line once it's on the air. In Phoenix, I'm Peter O'Dowd for Marketplace.
It's been nearly a year and a half since Belgian beer giant InBev bought St. Louis-based Anheuser-Busch. The new conglomerate says the company's North American headquarters will stay in St. Louis. That's despite many of the firm's top brass operating out of New York. From St. Louis Public Radio, reporter Adam Allington reports.
Scarcely 5 months after purchasing office space in Manhattan, AB InBev has already relocated a sizable chunk of its top management, including company CEO Carlos Brito, as well as his CFO and top sales and marketing executives. Industry analysts like Tom Perko of BevMark Consulting say it's hard to deny that a place like New York fits much better with the global ambitions of the company.
This is not about St. Louis. It's not about New York. It's really about redefining a culture. You have this heartland American tie, and that's really hard to give up. By the same token, this is a business that is owned by Belgians and run by Brazilians, and it is an international business.
Anheuser-Busch still controls about half of the U.S. beer market, a figure which translates to about 40% of AB InBev's global sales. Given that fact, company executives say St. Louis remains a perfect fit for their North American strategy. In St. Louis, I'm Adam Allington for Marketplace.
Maybe you're getting on an airplane today, and odds are improving you're going to have wireless internet on that flight. But as reporter Andrea Bernstein of member station WNYC explains, business travelers are still encountering a bumpy connection.
When you have Wi-Fi on a plane, you might try to use an internet service to place a call like this one.
My name is Abby Lunardini, and I'm the director of corporate communications at Virgin America, and we're currently over Kansas City flying at 443 feet.
Last spring, Virgin America began offering Wi-Fi on all its flights. AirTran does the same. American and Delta have about half their fleets Wi-Fi enabled. Lunardini says offering Wi-Fi makes good business sense.
Last year, there really was a softening in business travel traffic, and we actually didn't see that as much.
Travel agents say they're also seeing a demand. Blake Fleetwood says in the last several months, his business clients have started to change how they fly.
During the working hours, they want to be in touch. Now that there's Wi-Fi on planes, they're taking less and less red-eye flights.
And despite the adage that planes are a passenger's last sanctuary from a wired world,
pretty much they all want Wi-Fi. I would say 9 out of 10 of them want Wi-Fi.
Brian Solon does. He manages a team of 27 advertising salespeople for a major internet company. During a United flight from L.A. to New York, he was constantly IMing his team, though he did complain about the connection.
It's very slow, and you know, it's like waiting for dial-up without the initial beeps, right?
There's another way he used Wi-Fi to stay in touch with those on the ground.
I've been able to use video camera with my wife and daughter at home.
Oh, yeah. Even though Virgin America's Lunardini and I did just that, you're not really supposed to video chat. We broke the rules. In fact, the airlines try to block voice applications.
And that is primarily to preserve the cabin environment and to keep a kind of quiet, restful cabin environment.
Passengers want access to email, Google, and Twitter, but they like quiet planes, too.
About 72% of them would like to keep it that way.
So you won't have to worry about your neighbor doing an in-flight interview with a radio reporter. In New York, I'm Andrea Bernstein for Marketplace.
In New Orleans today, more than 1 million people are expected to turn out to celebrate Mardi Gras, and this year's festivities will be especially sweet for a city still riding high on a Super Bowl championship. People from all across the country have been flocking to the Big Easy to join the expanded celebration dubbed Lombardi Gras. And as David Weinberg reports, it's proving a much-needed boost for the city's economy.
The Avenue Pub is located in New Orleans' Garden District, a usually sleepy neighborhood compared to the French Quarter. But it's been so busy recently, owner Polly Watts says she hasn't slept for days.
We've had tons of tourists just for the Saints games. There are a lot of people, I think, that have changed their plans and decided to come down for Mardi Gras because this is going on, because they know this is just the place to be right now.
It's the same story across much of New Orleans. Hotels are 90% full, and retail and entertainment spending have jumped.
When you look at the amount of exposure the city got, the amount of increased businesses received, it's got to be in the millions and millions of dollars of economic impact. I mean, it's just been incredible.
Mary Beth Romig is with the city's Convention and Visitors Bureau.
We see this victory by the Saints in the Super Bowl as a game changer for us.
Since Super Bowl Sunday, public parades and parties have been a daily occurrence. Local resident Christian Rutherford says the civic pride is palpable.
I don't know, it's just been this theme of unity. And the theme of unity is destiny or fate smiles on the unified.
New Orleans is still struggling to reestablish its tourism industry since Hurricane Katrina, and there's hope that the Saints' victory will be the beginning of a long-term boost for the city's image and its economy. In New Orleans, I'm David Weinberg for Marketplace.
Capital One says the number of people having trouble paying their credit cards is up for the second straight month. Charge-offs, the term used for the loans that the company doesn't expect to be repaid, are up as well. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson was with us live from our New York Bureau with more on that story. Good morning, Jeremy.
Morning, Steve.
So why the jump?
Well, there is one overarching theme that hasn't gone away, and that, of course, is unemployment. Obviously, if you don't have a steady income, it's hard to pay your credit card bill. And that's often one of the bills that's low on the totem pole of bills for people who are struggling. But I just spoke with Scott Hoyt, who is the Senior Director of Consumer Economics at MoodysEconomy.com. He says there's a seasonal factor at play here as well.
You do tend to get increases this time of year as people go out and spend for the holidays and then have trouble making payments. But we have generally seen a tendency towards moderating delinquencies.
And Steve, he says that's in part because people are putting less money on their credit cards, either out of a new sense of responsibility or because they just can't get cheap credit anymore.
Yeah, and what about the charge-offs, Jeremy? Are these loans that Capital One is basically writing off as losses?
Right. Well, Capital One is reporting that figure is up now to 10.4% in January compared with 10.1% in December. Hoyt calls that number extraordinarily high, and he says charge-offs in general may get worse before they get better because it takes a while for a credit card company to give up on the possibility that they'll ever get repaid.
All right. Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson reporting from our New York bureau. Jeremy, thanks.
Thank you.
And finally, the economic downturn's taken cash out of a lot of pockets. So some cities are printing their own currency. SmartMoney.com reports small currencies are popping up in numbers not seen since the Great Depression. The idea is to get locals to spend money in their own neighborhoods. For example, in one part of Detroit, there's the Cheer. The paper money features a naked Greco-Roman superhero guarding over the Motor City. Now, it's legal to print money as long as it doesn't look like U.S. currency, and I'm thinking in Detroit's case, there's probably no danger in that. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.